The door opened, and there was my father coming out, the sight of him making me feel good, but only for a second, because instead of his sample case behind him, there were the two cops who had come in their cop car. That's when my heart stopped. Instead of pulling the sample case, my father's arms were bent in back of him, and on his wrists were handcuffs. Handcuffs? But why? What was going on? He didn't shoot that man. The fat man did. I should run over and tell those cops what I saw. The fat man sneaking in. The fat man putting a gun in his pocket. But before I could move, one cop opened the back door of his car. My father got in. The cop closed the door and got in the front seat beside his partner, who drove away, no siren, and woof, my father was gone. To jail, I guess. I sat there, dumbed out. My brain scrambled, no one to turn to, afraid. I felt crying coming up, but I am not a crier, and I tried hard to put it down. I was roasting in the Ford's furnace that was getting stoked by the St. Louis sun. I pushed myself to open all the windows, but the air that came in was harder to breathe than the air inside. The rubberneckers had thinned out a little now that the ambulance had disappeared with the guy under the sheet. But there were cop cars and cops hanging around the J&J store, which meant that things were still on the skillet, so I better figure out pretty quick just what I should do. Our life had given me some preparation for that. I had gone to 11 different grammar schools because my father had signed all those depression leases, the ones where landlords gave 2 or 3 months of free rent. We'd pack up the night before the free rent ran out and move to a new place that offered a whole new period of free rent. Landlords were all in terrible shape because of a glut of vacant flats. I did all right in the new schools, because one thing I am is a whiz at writing, and when the new teacher saw the sentences this new kid could string together, their eyes would light up, and sometimes they would even advance me a grade. But my best experience was last summer, when we were all living in one room in the Westgate Hotel on Kings Highway in Del Mar. That was the time that the doctor at the clinic sent my mother to the Fifi Sanitarium to treat her lungs for consumption, which is what they called it. It was also the time my father got a watch strap line to sell what he called on the road being Illinois and Iowa. I didn't think watch straps would light up a lot of buyers, but they did give my father a break from the glass candles that he kept under one of our beds. Of course, my father going on the road meant I would be living alone in 303. He arranged for me to have meals with Mr. Dinopoulos downstairs at the Dewdrop Inn. "You're the man of the house now, Aaron," my father said as he gave me $2 silver for any emergencies. I think I would have been all right if that eviction notice hadn't been glued to our door. Several rooms besides ours also got them. "For non-payment of rent now seriously in arrears, you are to vacate your premises immediately, without removing any of your possessions, which will remain with the Westgate until your debt has been satisfied." But I knew that as long as I stayed in our room, the landlord, Mound City Savings Bank, could not send Doug, the disgusting, bloodthirsty bellboy, into our room to do his dirty work. But I had one big problem. I could not leave the room to go down to the Dewdrop Inn on the corner to get something to eat. I could fill up on only so much water. Also, the hotel had shut off our room's electricity, so forget about reading after dark, even if I had some library books I wanted to read. The Atwater Kent's tubes had long ago burned out. The only good thing was the taxi dance hall in the basement of the hotel, the good times. On a good night, when it carried up, I could listen to the music played by the band. Saxophone, piano, and drums. During the night, Doug, the rat-faced bellboy, would scratch on the door and make spooky noises. To defend myself, like I sometimes saw in the movies, I pushed the dresser and the two chairs and the linoleum-top table against the door. But what I couldn't do anything about was that I was starting to starve. I finally got so hungry, so out of my mind hungry, that I ate the full-color picture of a roast beef that was in an old copy of Woman's Home Companion that I found on the floor of the closet. I scissored the roast beef nicely, salted it, and I swear every mouthful tasted like eating the real thing.